We apologize for being behind our time. It's entirely my fault. Our next case is A23-0768, State of Minnesota versus Derek Timothy Days. As all counsel are aware, the counsel for the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief. Counsel for the respondent will have 15 minutes, and then finally, counsel for the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. So whenever you're ready, just approach the microphone, adjust to your level, and tell us who you are in a loud, clear voice, please.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Gina Schultz. I'm an assistant appellate public defender, and I represent Derek Days, the appellant in this matter. Under Minnesota law, there is a line separating first-degree manslaughter from second-degree intentional murder. And there's no question at this point which side of the line Mr. Day's offense falls on. He pleaded guilty to intentional second-degree murder, and he's never challenged that conviction. What matters for this case is that Mr. Day's offense falls much closer to that line than it does to the typical second-degree intentional murder. And we know that for two reasons. First of all, there were elements of provocation here. And I'm using that term somewhat colloquially because I'm not saying, like I said, that this was a first-degree manslaughter. There's a lot we don't know about what happened that night. But what we do know is that Mr. Days committed his offense while intervening in a fight that he did not start. We know that as part of that fight, he saw his close friend being punched repeatedly. We know that he tried to intervene nonviolently multiple times when he was shoved away. It was unsuccessful. And we know that before the fight even started, he was put in somewhat of a fearful mind state. He was given a gun for protection because of how these games have turned out in the past. And so these elements make his offense less serious than typical in exactly the way the legislature has told us matters. Both subjective mind state, he was in a fearful, as the district court said, highly emotional state, and there was an objective provocation. There was a fight here. It was chaotic. We don't know exactly what was going on in his mind, but it looks like he panicked. When the district court said the fight was, for all intents and purposes, over, I disagree with that characterization. I've watched that video probably 100 times now, and at the point where he makes that irreversible decision to shoot TLB, it is still ongoing. He is pulling his friend off of him. And I cannot emphasize enough that this was a second-degree murder. This was not a rational decision. This was not a morally correct decision. We're certainly not here trying to defend it. But the legislature has clearly said that there are degrees of severity to homicides that range from manslaughter to first-degree murder. And our argument today is that this is, because these elements of provocation were present, this is a less serious offense than typical. And one of the ways we know that is by looking at the typical second-degree intentional murder case that has come before this court. And we cited in our brief, I think, 21 cases. I'm sure that I missed something in my Westlaw search.
I doubt that. Ms. Schultz, do you dispute the facts that the victim was shot 3 times while he was on his back?
I do not, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yeah. But that, again, makes this...
I apologize for interrupting. While he's on his back means he was no longer able to keep fighting with the person who allegedly started the fight. Would that be a fair statement, Ms. Schultz?
I think at that very moment, I think that's probably right. It's a little bit hard to tell because it does appear that fight is still ongoing. But I agree, and I think that is one of those facts that separates Mr. Day's offense from, say, first-degree manslaughter or defense of others, because I think there is...
He had also previously shot the victim's friend, too?
That's right, Your Honor. Yeah. Yes, and he pleaded guilty to second-degree assault for that and received a separate conviction.
I've read your brief. We all know what the law is here, the standard of review. We're looking at how, whether this district court judge abused his discretion. And it even goes further than that, that only in a rare case will we as an appellate court reverse that exercise of discretion. It's a hard argument, I think, for you to make that he shoots one person first who was involved in it, and then when that person's disabled and shot, he turns and shoots the victim three times as he's laying on his back on the ground. You know, how do we write an opinion identifying how this is that rare case that warrants a reversal?
Well, and Your Honor, I think in terms of being that rare case, this isn't about necessarily saying the district court needed to impose a downward durational departure here. But our argument is that the district court made an error of law by in its analysis, when it said this is not less serious than typical, the district court pointed to facts in the record that make it a second-degree intentional murder. And I think that was a misapprehension of Day's argument, which is not that it was something else. It wasn't that it was a first-degree manslaughter or that it was defense of others. Those facts put it squarely within that statute.
But I mean, even if it's defense of others, your actions have to be reasonable.
Absolutely, Your Honor, and that's why we're not arguing that it was defense of others.
So
if it was, it wouldn't be a crime at all.
You know, the cases where we've seen departures downward are the where if your client had intervened, sort of pushed the victim, he falls back, hits his head, dead. And, you know, that's that's different. and I agree. Were I in the district court under those facts, I would have said, you know, that's a little different. You know, it is less serious than your typical second-degree murder. So, again, Ms. Schultz, why is this less serious than your typical? Why is this not your typical second-degree murder?
Well, Your Honor, I think under the facts that under your hypothetical, I don't see how that could be a second-degree intentional murder. It is an intentional homicide, and so that's a predicate fact that any offense that falls within this statute had to have been an intentional killing, and so I think what you've described is just a different offense. It is some degree of manslaughter, and here. Again, we are not disputing that this falls within the definitional right. The definition of second degree intentional murder, but it is those elements of provocation that make it less serious. And when we look at the cases that we cited in our brief, those cases do not involve this level of provocation. Generally, there's no provocation, and we cited a couple that look kind of like imperfect self-defense or some level of provocation. But even those, which are themselves a small percentage of these cases, are very factually distinguishable here. Because
so, counsel, are you suggesting that the district court didn't consider that argument?
You know, I think the district court did consider that argument, but I think the judge told us exactly what he was thinking, which is that it wasn't serious for these reasons, because Mr. Days could have made a different decision, because although it was a highly an emotional situation, it was not a heat of passion. And I think that's where the error is. And that's what we're not even asking this court to impose a downward durational departure. We're asking for a remand back to the district court so that he can reevaluate his decision in light of an opinion from this court saying, we've looked at the typical second-degree murder, and for these reasons, it is less serious. And it's less serious for exactly the reason the legislature told us a crime could be worthy.
Well, would we say on remand that we've looked at it and it is less serious, or do we simply say you need to look at it again because the reasons you've articulated you know, go to the actual elements of second degree versus what trial counsel was arguing below?
I think either would be appropriate, Your Honor.
Well, I bet you'd like the first one, though.
I certainly would like the first one, Your Honor. And I think it would give more guidance to the district court.
But the law has always been, hasn't it, that in deciding to follow the guidelines, the district court didn't have to give any reason.
That's
so isn't what's going to happen if we did what you want, is the judge is going to take it and say, I'm imposing the guideline sentence, period. Have a nice day, folks. And then there's nothing in the record. So does it really matter? I mean, if there is no requirement that the judge give a reason for following the guidelines. Here the judge did. I think most do probably under those circumstances. Maybe if we were to issue the decision, the guidance we would give the district court might not be the guidance that you would want to come out of this. Because I sentenced many people over my career as a district court judge, and usually I said something. Maybe I shouldn't have. I don't know. But I'm just wondering, how much does it really matter what the judge said at the time when he didn't have to say anything?
I understand that, Your Honor, and I completely agree. The judge didn't have to say anything. If you send this case back to the judge, he could impose the presumptive sentence. I appreciate that the judge gave a very thoughtful analysis. I think my client probably appreciated that at the time. But here, the judge told us exactly what he was thinking, and it included an error. And that makes a record that this court can look at and say, actually, you got this one wrong, this part of this decision wrong. And certainly, you could make the same decision on a different basis. But you can't just look at the elements of the offense and say, this is not less serious than typical because it is a second-degree intentional murder. And I understand this is a highly deferential standard of review. I can't cite a lot of cases with similar facts. There's one case I could find that I apologize I did not cite in the briefs, but it's State v. Christensen. It's an non-precedential opinion from this court where the district court denied a departure because of the behavior of people who sat in the gallery during trial. And this court said that's not a good reason and sent it back for reconsideration. And it's not a perfect analogy, that's kind of what happened here. The district court could have made this decision for any number of reasons, but the district court told us exactly what its reasons were, and they are inadequate given what the legislature has told us about what kinds of homicides are worthy of what kinds of punishments. So that is what we're asking this court for today. If there are any questions, I would be happy to answer them. Otherwise, I will save the rest of my argument for rebuttal.
Thank you very much, Ms. Schultz. We'll now hear from counsel for the respondent, please.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jim Haas. I'm an assistant Olmsted County attorney, and I represent the state of Minnesota in this case. The appellant's request for a shorter sentence or durational departure is effectively premised on the idea that Mr. Greenhill was an innocent victim of an unprovoked attack by Mr. Banks, and which led to the physical altercation. I do agree with counsel, and I think I appreciate the candor and sincerity that she described the facts in saying there's just a lot we don't know about what happened here. The argument is premised primarily on this surveillance video, but we don't know the context of this physical altercation. We don't know we have some general notions that there was some dice game. We don't know who was aligned with whom, and we don't know what people said before Mr. Banks and Mr. Greenhill began wrestling with each other. So, as I maybe have alluded to in the brief, I think the record is fairly thin with respect to facts that would say this was an unprovoked attack. Now, when you watch the video, it would seem that Mr. Banks, the decedent, made the first physical movement toward Mr. Greenhill, and they began wrestling with each other. But it didn't take very long for Mr. Banks to find himself on his back, pinned to the pavement by Mr. Greenhill. And that was the position he was in when he was shot. So I would ask the court to just look at the facts, and it is the defendant that must demonstrate these substantial and compelling circumstances to deviate from the guidelines and whether this theory is fully supported by the record. And as Judge Flory noted, to impose a guideline sentence, the district court need not give reasons. But the district court here was very thoughtful. And on the bottom of page 45 of the sentencing transcript, I think really fairly stated the defendant's position about that, about how this was less typical because the decedent was the aggressor. He makes reference to heat of passion. And I mean, I think the district court pretty accurately summarized the position that was taken there and the same position that was taken here and squarely addressed it. This is not a situation where the district court kind of missed the argument, didn't consider it. I think the district court did very thoughtfully and squarely consider it and just rejected it. In fact, that was the exact words after him summarizing the argument. The district court says, I cannot agree with that. He just didn't agree. And from that, I think a court can infer that he didn't necessarily agree that either that maybe he was the aggressor or it was that it rose to this level of rage. And he then goes on to describe more, I think, of his rationale. But one thing that that was not brought up in the briefs, but is self-evident
in
the...
Do you agree or disagree when he gave his final explanation, he was just recounting the elements of second-degree murder and using that as a justification for not departing downward as opposed to addressing her arguments?
I think
the trial counsel's arguments.
To summarize the district court's position is that this act is not less serious than other second-degree murders, than other intentional killings, I think was the term that he used. I don't know that the district court went on to sort of apply the law of manslaughter or heat of passion because it really isn't exactly asked. No one disputes that that's what this is, a second-degree intentional murder. The question really was it so significantly less serious than others? And the district court considered that and found that it was not less serious. I was going to mention when you look at the complaint itself, one thing we haven't talked about is the fact that there is a co-defendant and a second shooter in this case named Nautica Delshawn Cox. And in the complaint itself, it describes the allegations of Mr. Cox. You can, when you watch the videos in Exhibit 1 from the sentencing hearing, you can see another shooter, or at least another person with a gun, and that's very clear in the video. And there's also testimony, I think, during the sentencing hearing, you know, about other shell casings. I don't want to go too far off track.
Why is any of that relevant?
Well, just to the extent that is this circumstance, this fact pattern, less serious than others? And I mentioned other things in my brief, such as...
Are you suggesting that Mr. Days and this other individual were sort of in cahoots and, you know, one was going to shoot some people and the other was going to shoot some other people?
Well, all I'm saying is that, Mr. Cox hasn't stood trial yet. He's pending trial, but he is charged. And generally, notions are if you act in concert with others, it's... You know, can be more serious, particularly when we're talking about shooting firearms, which was what happened here. So if Mr. Days had cover fire from a co-defendant who was shooting at Mr. Washington, as alleged, and some of it's, you know, captured on video. So, again, I don't know that that's the long pole in the tent, but it's part of the context. And I think what we tried to argue in our brief is that the argument is taken a bit out of context with the rest of the circumstances, such as, you know, the second-degree assault to which he pleaded guilty for shooting at Mr. Washington. And it's in this context that this all arises. Is this act, the totality of this circumstance is culminating in Mr. Banks' death, you know, less serious than other second-degree intentional murders? And our argument, just, you know, in summary, is that when you take the totality of the circumstances here, it's not enough. Doesn't make it one of those rare cases where we would reverse the district court judge, who I think very carefully exercised his discretion in this case. I won't keep you here all morning. I know you've had a busy day. Unless the court has any questions for me, I would remit the balance of my time and just respectfully ask the court to affirm the district court's decision to impose the guideline sentence that was part of the plea agreement.
Thank you, Mr. Haas. Ms. Schultz, you'll have the last word, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. I have just 2 points that I want to make, and then I'll be available to answer this court's questions. First, I want to start with the second shooter, Mr. Cox. And counsel is absolutely right. There was a second shooter. He's captured on video. But in the record of this case, we don't know anything about his relationship to Mr. Days. The only thing we know is that in the PSI, Mr. Days said, "I didn't even know he was there until it was all over." And so there's no evidence of coordination here. There's no evidence that he was getting cover from a second shooter. And then the second point I want to make is that our argument really does not rest on the idea of Mr. Greenhill being an innocent victim. I agree with counsel. It is hard to tell from this video exactly what happened. Certainly, TLB is the first person you see on the video throwing a punch, and he appears to be the most aggressive during this altercation. But we don't know what happened, and our argument doesn't depend on Mr. Greenhill being an innocent victim. It depends on there being provocation here. And we know from Mr. Day's perspective, he said in the PSI, this was a fight 3-1, and that's why he felt like he needed to intervene, because one person was fighting against three people, and he tried to peacefully intervene before making that irreversible decision to shoot. So I think those facts establish a level of provocation that is not legally significant to the extent that it would mitigate his offense to a lesser offense, but it does move his offense closer to that line separating first-degree manslaughter from second-degree intentional murder. And because the district court's decision only dealt with the question of whether it was solidly within the second-degree intentional murder statute, we are asking this court to reverse and remand for reconsideration. And if this court doesn't have any other questions, I'll yield my time.
Thank you, Ms. Schultz.
Thank you.
The matter was well argued. As always, it's a privilege to see you.